From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we'll have New York reaction to President Obama's plan to tighten gun control. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the governor's executive order to get the homeless off the streets in freezing weather. And Senator Schumer says the new CIDR Act will be a boon for upstate. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. President Barack Obama announced this week that he plans to tighten gun control measures using his executive authority. That drew mixed reviews here in New York, a state with some of the toughest gun regulations in the country. We get more from North Country Public Radio's Brian Mann.
The first man to speak at yesterday's White House gathering was actually Mark Barton. Over the last 3 years, he's become one of the country's leading gun control activists.
On the morning of Friday, December 14th, 2012, my sweet little boy, my 7-year-old son Daniel, was among 20 first graders and 6 brave educators who were shot to death at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut.
President Obama said again yesterday that the Sandy Hook shooting changed the way he looks at gun violence. Here he is speaking to Mark Barden.
I still remember the first time we met, the time we spent together, and the conversation we had about Daniel. And that changed me that day. And my hope earnestly has been that it would change the country.
The Sandy Hook mass shooting did change the gun control landscape here in New York State, where Governor Andrew Cuomo pushed through the SAFE Act, which curbs access to military and assault-style rifles and magazines. The Republican Congress has rejected similar measures in Washington, so President Obama has announced new executive actions designed to tighten existing regulations on gun dealers while also beefing up law enforcement and background checks.
From what I've seen, it's mostly a load of nothing.
That's Jacob Reaper from Pine Plains, New York. He's vice president of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, a group that's filed a lawsuit hoping to roll back the SAFE Act. He says there's no tie between the wide availability of firearms in the U.S. and the recent spate of mass shootings. He thinks President Obama is trying to hoodwink the country.
Specifically, the last shooting out in California, the president was trying to talk about guns because he didn't want to talk about Islamic terrorists.
This is a common argument among gun rights activists that President Obama and Governor Cuomo are focusing on guns rather than on problem areas like terrorism and urban violence in black neighborhoods. Ralph Hartman is treasurer of the Saranac Lake Fish and Game Club.
Chicago, New York City, L.A., the gangs, the bad guys. You take away those cities, you'll see a big drop.
Hartman says many gun owners simply no longer trust the president to enact gun control laws that don't violate their constitutional rights.
What they're afraid of is that our government or our president are going to continue to whittle away and go the way that Australia went, where they confiscated all the guns.
There's no evidence to date that Mr. Obama has embraced an agenda that includes confiscating guns, and his measures are, in fact, tested by the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, others in New York State heard the president's speech very differently, as a common-sense call to action.
It's clear from the president's remarks that state and local legislatures need to act as well.
Joanne Simon is a Democratic state assemblywoman who represents neighborhoods in Brooklyn. This week, the NRA posted an image of Simon and another lawmaker that showed bullets next to their photographs, a response to their call for new restrictions in New York on the purchase of ammunition.
I think it's disturbing. You know, it's designed to be intimidating.
But it's unlikely that New York's Republican-controlled state Senate will back any new gun regulations. Meanwhile, the SAFE Act, New York's tough gun control law, still faces legal hurdles that could go all the way to the Supreme Court. I'm Brian Mann.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, the chairman of the New York State Republican Committee, Ed Cox, someone you talk to regularly for your Capital Connection program, says if Trump gets the Republican nomination, he would not only likely tone down his campaign style, but he would do well in New York.
Well, he is a New Yorker. He did build the Wallman Rink, you know, the old skating rink. It's now the Trump Rink. The carousel has Trump's name on it also. He's a quintessential New York. I just wrote a column about that. But I don't know that he's quintessential New York in the right way. But, you know, the chutzpah factor and the getting out there in front of everybody and calling all your enemies names and the rest of it, it's at least entertaining and interesting. And that seems to be one of the things that is attracting so many people to his banner.
Well, entertaining and interesting mark the 2016 legislative session in New York, Alan. New York lawmakers kicked off their session yesterday, which is expected to be dominated by debates over government corruption, education funding, and Governor Andrew Cuomo's proposal to gradually raise the minimum wage to $15. Normally, we would have heard the State of the State address. It will be next Wednesday, along with the budget address.
Well, you know, the whole idea of creating a new Andrew Cuomo is afoot. And when we see all of the things that he is doing that creates this new Andrew, you understand what's going on. So another track on the Long Island Railroad wants to rebuild finally Pennsylvania Station and the Moynihan Building and doing all of those things and putting a fortune into infrastructure repair in upstate New York, because you can't do anything in New York City if you're not going to do equivalent for, quote, upstate, where he has not shown to be popular in the polls. So this is pretty much business as usual, but with, I think, a new kinder Andrew.
Ed Cox also had some comments about the governor. He says that the governor, Andrew Cuomo, is telling big lies as he lobbies for $15 an hour minimum wage for all New Yorkers. Ed Cox, who opposes the wage, says Cuomo reminds him of a well-known communist dictator, Fidel Castro.
I am a huge Ed Cox fan. I get a great kick out of the guy. I don't always agree with him. I certainly don't agree with him here. I think people deserve a living wage, and Cuomo was understanding that. And this is the same governor who we used to think was a bit of a fiscal conservative, but he knew he had a revolution going on his left. He was going to get a primary. He did very poorly against Zephyr Teachout, who had no money. She lost, of course, but she came damn close, and she won a lot of counties upstate. So I think this guy is going to heed that message, and he is now for raising the rates, and so is everybody else. The SUNY chancellor has said everybody at SUNY will make at least that. The mayor of New York says everybody who works in the city is going to make all of that. Line up, everybody, because you're finally doing the right thing.
New York's foray into medical marijuana begins today, Alan. We, of course, have medical marijuana around our region in Vermont and Massachusetts, as well as proposals and ballot questions potentially for recreational use. New York will be perhaps the toughest state when it comes to this. You can't smoke it.
That's right. Can't smoke it. And I would say that there is a pretty effective distribution system for marijuana in New York. It's called organized crime. And, you know, you can't tax it because it's illegal. People are getting it. They're using it. Do we have any previous experience with this kind of thing? Let's see. Well, David, I suppose you could say that when we said you can't drink liquor in this country, we had some experience in how we could create organized crime and make it pay. And the same thing is going on here with marijuana. It's ridiculous.
As the frigid weather hit New York this week, the governor came out with an executive order to get folks homeless on the streets out of the cold and into shelters when the temperatures went below freezing, which they immediately did. And, of course, there was some pushback from folks like New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and the City Police Commissioner William Bratton.
And you left one group out, and that's the homeless themselves. They don't want to go, they say, and many say that these shelters are unsafe, that they shouldn't go there, that they have other places to go, and they are going to do it. And then there's a whole civil liberties issue. If you want to basically imprison somebody, grab them and put them somewhere, don't you have to go to a court to get, you know, that order first? Then there is this relationship between the governor and Mayor de Blasio. The one thing that I've never been able to understand, and I ask our guests all the time here at WAMC, why is he doing that? Why is the governor picking on the mayor again and again, slapping him up around the head? Now the mayor comes back with his police commissioner, who's a no-nonsense man, Mr. Bratton, and they say, we already have this provision here. We've been doing this. What is the governor doing here? Well, I think that this governor wants to be not only governor, but mayor. And he is advancing daily, giving de Blasio a hard time. Now, look, de Blasio isn't the most popular mayor. But on the other hand, Cuomo has to live down this reputation he's garnered over the years of being a bit of a bully. And when you do something like this and you keep picking on the mayor, there's got to be a little sympathy, you know, because, you know, otherwise it may be that the mayor's a schlemiel. But that doesn't mean that people like this kind of thing. We can all remember when people bullied us.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Governor Cuomo says he'll increase funding to environmental projects as well as state parks in his 2016 budget. The news was applauded by environmentalists as well as some business leaders. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo is releasing parts of his 2016 agenda in the days leading up to his speech. In a talk on Long Island, he said that he'll increase the state's Environmental Protection Fund, which languished during the long recession and slow economic recovery.
It's been depleted over the years. We want to increase funding by more than 30% on the EPF to get it up to a level where it can make a real difference. And I want to fund it at $300 million, which will be the highest level in history.
Cuomo froze the environmental fund at $134 million a year when he first took office, citing a $10 billion budget gap. This year, the state's running a surplus. The governor says he will also increase funding to state parks in his new budget. Environmental groups are overjoyed. They say it's been a goal for years to fully finance the fund, which was created by the current governor's father, former Governor Mario Cuomo, 23 years ago. Jessica Otney with the Nature Conservancy says the news comes as a very pleasant surprise.
This is absolutely a historic moment, and I think the entire community is thrilled.
She says the fund has paid for environmental projects in every county of the state, including improving public lands.
Waterfront revitalization. So all over the state, communities have used this, from Oswego to Long Island out to Buffalo, to revitalize waterfront areas and make them more accessible and useful to the public. Then there's also, farmland protection. So making sure that our family farms across New York State can continue providing local healthy food to New Yorkers.
Cuomo and the legislature decide how to divide the money between different categories. Groups then apply for grants. Otney says some have been waiting quite a while for a chance for funding.
There are a tremendous amount of projects out there, and there's a tremendous need for this funding. In some programs, we see things like a 9-year waiting line for funding.
The state's business council is also pleased with the increased environmental funding, saying it helps in everything from land conservation to pollution prevention. Cuomo also says he's thinking big on infrastructure projects. He's proposing building a third track for the Long Island Railroad and better public transit access to the airports. In a speech in Rochester, he talked of increased funding for downtown revitalization projects. He says he'll be making announcements in multiple regions of the state in coming days to announce more plans. The governor's also pressing the state Senate to agree to pass a law to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That's for workers not covered by his executive actions that already apply to fast food workers and state workers. He said he'll offer tax cuts to small businesses as a deal sweetener. Cuomo repeated that promise, and he offered some details.
This will be about a $1.5 billion tax cut to over 1 million small businesses.
And it's exactly the signal that we want to send.
Cuomo says he'll reduce corporate taxes for small employers from 6.5% to 4%. Small businesses where owners pay state income taxes instead will be able to exclude 15% of their income from taxes. He says the small employers would see benefits beginning in 2017. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
A central New York mayor and a Capital Region congressman are advocating for a new federally funded tool to ensure communities across New York and the U.S. have access to clean drinking water. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner said she was proud of her city's water system. The city of more than 140,000 draws clean water from Skaneateles Lake.
But with any benefit, there is a burden, and the burden has been that there just has not been enough investment into this infrastructure to keep it in a good state of repair.
Miner said 2015 brought 372 water main breaks in the city of Syracuse. In the first week of 2016, there have been at least 10. Much of the Salt City's water infrastructure is over 100 years old. 20th District Representative Paul Tonko said in some parts of the city of Albany, pipes are as much as 140 years old, built when Rutherford B. Hayes was president.
If that doesn't shock our senses, I don't know what would.
Many will recall the problems brought on by last winter's so-called polar vortex that brought extreme cold and froze water pipes across the state. Tonko cited the U.S. EPA's 2011 report to Congress that found America's infrastructure need at $320 billion over the next 20 years.
That's a huge number, but again, the cost of inaction, the cost of doing nothing, will far outweigh the cost of playing catch-up here with our water infrastructure financing.
Tonko is calling for a reauthorization of a state revolving loan fund to support water infrastructure projects. While federal stimulus funding includes a bump, Tonko said that came after a flat decade of support for infrastructure. He also said the lack of focus on water infrastructure from the federal government is threatening the knowledgeable workforce for local water systems.
We need sound people, certified people, professionals that are running these systems. And I think the lack of attention to our water infrastructure, our drinking water infrastructure, has led to less of a career focus for those who are choosing career paths early in their work life.
Tonko, an engineer by trade, co-authored the recently signed Grassroots Rural and Small Community Water Systems Assistance Act. The law reauthorizes the Safe Drinking Water Act Technical Assistance Program to support drinking water systems in small and rural communities. Miner has done her share of advocating as well. The city recently received a major grant from Bloomberg Philanthropies to create an Office of Innovation, tasked with solving infrastructure issues. As one of his first announcements in the new year, Governor Andrew Cuomo said in his legislative budget proposal he would increase spending for water infrastructure projects by $100 million. Miner said she appreciates the effort, but that in many instances it's difficult for cash-strapped communities to enter certain state loan programs. She said Syracuse is often considered too big to be eligible for certain funding awards, pushing the need for more federal investment. Miner added she believes in the science of climate change and says New York and other states will not be able to handle the challenges of the future, including stronger storm events, without significant investment.
I believe wholeheartedly that water is going to be the commodity of the 21st century. Just like oil was the commodity of the last century, water is going to be our commodity. And we have a chance here to really take an asset that is inherent to New York State and use it as an opportunity for business and economic development.
Tonko and Miner both pointed to the federal investigation into the contaminated water supply in Flint, Michigan, as a warning of what's to come if government leaders fail to act.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer says his cider rack will be a boon for the upstate economy. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas caught up with the senior senator from New York at Nine Pin Cider Works in Albany.
In February 2015, Schumer announced the Senate Finance Committee passed the Cider Act,
which stands for Cider Investment and Development Through Excise Tax Reduction.
Bipartisan legislation he first introduced in 2013.
This legislation was included in the tax extender deal that passed at the end of the year, just in time for the 2016 crop. New York has 650 apple orchards spread across the state. In the Capital Region alone, we have 204 of them, so we have a third. All of these growers now have the opportunity to benefit if they're producing hard cider, including producers like Nine Pin in Albany and Slyborough up in Washington County. And this means that New York could be at the core of hard cider production very soon.
New York is the second largest apple producer nationwide, harvesting a total of 29.5 million bushels annually. Nine Pin is growing rapidly. The change in law came at the perfect time.
More often than not, the hard cider products our New York craft producers were making or wanted to make were bumped into the wrong category and were paying much too high a tax.
Schumer explained that many of New York's hard cider producers, like Nine Pin Cider Works in Albany, are small craft hard cider operators. And because they rely on natural products, there was very little predictability and control over the precise alcohol content of their product.
Every day, businesses like Nine Pin were at risk of having to throw out or sell at a much higher tax rate entire batches of freshly produced cider.
Under the previous federal law, the outdated definition of hard apple and pear cider only allowed for up to 7% alcohol by volume before it is taxed at the higher alcohol per volume rate of wine, and only a certain level of carbonation before it is subject to the champagne tax. Schumer was joined by Alejandro Del Peral, founder of Nine Pin Cider Works, who says business is booming and the cidery is barely keeping up with the demand.
As people want it, we'll make it. And it's really, you know, it boils down to the market. And as of right now, the market is exploding and we're excited to be a part of it.
Nine Pin, which has just been producing cider for 2 years, has already bottled 92 different varieties of the beverage. Mayor Kathy Sheehan says Nine Pin's expansion and growth underscores the fact that small business is the lifeblood and the future of Albany. She said the city likes to partner with small businesses, and part of the partnership with Nine Pin required that laws be changed.
Because this is a product that was not envisioned at the time that some of our ag and markets laws and some of our federal tax laws were put into place.
Under the Cider Act, hard cider products can be up to 8.5% alcohol without being taxed at the higher rate. Schumer added the new law is now set to ensure New York growers and producers' ability to compete overseas and expand their businesses for years to come.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1602 or just listen to podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.